Hello, and thank you for joining us on this episode of The Dev Team. I'm Mark Onsman.
I'm Daryl Kilzer.
And I'm Jake Overall.
We're a group of developers and bootcamp instructors here to help you in joining the world as a software developer. Whether you're a self-taught developer, bootcamp grad, or a CS student, we're here to help you fill in some of the knowledge you need to grow in your role as a junior developer.
In this week's episode, Jake starts us off with the word of the day, cash, and not the money kind. I follow up with the death of Internet Explorer, and Mark rounds us up with a little game we call Over or Under.
All right, so I want to kick us off with something that is incredibly difficult. It's actually said to be one of the two very, very hard things to do in computer science or in programming, and that is cash, right? Cash is one of those words that sometimes when you very first hear it, it's like, oh yeah, that's real simple, right? But then when you actually dive down into the specifics of implementing cash, it is so stupid hard, right? And to just very briefly explain, cache is essentially saving into some sort of local memory a current data set, right? Or a current state, we could call it, right? If you have an application state or a particular set of data that I don't want to have to spend all the time necessary to go through like a full process and a full fetch, go talk to our database, go pull what's actually in the database, like that takes too long. So I want to improve my performance. I want to improve all these other things. So I'm just going to implement cache. Again, I think cache is, it's a neat concept. It's incredibly difficult to pull off, but it's all about keeping in local memory a particular piece of data, right? And I don't know how much you guys have actually played around with trying to implement cache on like a server-side requests or putting a layer in front of a database. But if you've done it, it can be incredibly difficult.
Yeah, I think that, you know, obviously the joke you alluded to earlier, right? One of the hardest things about software development in that list is cache and validation, right? I think that that's where things get weird. Because caching, that's where like the very first layer of like caching isn't too bad. It's that next layer of when do I need to renew the cache? Or when do I need to change that out? Or what are the signal indicators to say, okay, on this case, do it, and on this other one, don't. Probably where I've seen it the most or where I've kind of dabbled with it the most is in like PWAs, progressive web apps, where essentially you're saying, okay, either fetch the, you know, what is the priority? If there's internet, do I fetch it or do I pull it out of cache? Or do I fetch it and then pull it out of cache? Or vice versa, or, you know, kind of those comparisons. And I think that, yeah, that's certainly, it definitely gets tricky. That first step, not bad. But making it work right, that's the getter.
Absolutely, right? That's the whole, you know, cache is just, hey, it's very simple. Let's create an object and let's just store the whole state in that object, right? And then if you need that data, just go to that local object, right? But that, the term cache busting is when is it appropriate to actually break that cache and force a new fetch?
Yeah. Like you guys are saying, I think it depends on the scale that you're going for this at, right? The larger the scale, the harder, obviously. But what you usually see with those larger scale applications when you're trying to implement cache is now it comes with this whole nother service layer or many service layers. Not only that, but like you guys are saying, there's also that life cycle behind it. You're now implementing this whole new system, not just a piece of your application, but something that's running next to it to make sure that, hey, everything that's local is synchronized with everything on the database and at what times, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's certain events that you really care about. Like, let's throw this into Daryl's realm, actually. Let's talk about video games, right? Like, imagine something as simple as, or simple, right, quote unquote, something like a leaderboard, right? And if I'm playing this video game and all of a sudden I hit the top of the leaderboard, right? I'm ecstatic. And I get to type in my initials, right? JDO, like, there's my initials. And I want to immediately like share that out, you know, tweet it out. I'm going to all my social media platforms. And the game server has cached the leaderboard and it doesn't update for an hour or two. All of my anticipation, all of my excitement just immediately got destroyed because when I send this leaderboard to my buddy, who they play this game all the time as well, they get a cached version of that leaderboard and they don't see my name. Like, what type of garbage is that?
Yeah, I think that that's where you really boil down to like what is important and what isn't, right? And I think you have to kind of roadmap that a little bit. And you, that's where in the planning stage, you're making those decisions and say, okay, here's information we can cache because it changes infrequently, and here's information we can don't have to worry about. And I could very much see leaderboard falling within that later category, because initially you might go, well, you know, we only get a new person on the leaderboard every, you know, maybe once a day. But for that one person, timing is crucial. And even more so now, like if you especially look at things like, you know, whether they're Twitch streaming or, you know, maybe it's not just your friends, but you have hundreds of followers and they're like, oh, yeah, I was watching this guy and I got him. I saw him get the new high score, the new speed runtime. Obviously, I watch a lot of Twitch, apparently.
Obviously.
whatever it is. And so they want to see that right away. And if that's not there, they're going to be upset. So I think that that's definitely a part of your road mapping and a part of your application process is let me take time to map out what can be cached and what can't. Images, I think, is probably where I have found my own experience is the most beneficial. And fortunately, that's not too difficult.
Yeah. I also, you know, like Daryl was talking about, you know, you have to have this other service layer, right? And that service layer, sometimes you have an entire server purely dedicated to just messaging, right? You have that pub sub idea or kind of the observer pattern stretched across servers. There are certain events that occur that simply just let's bust the cache and even restore it in that kind of same instance. And then it doesn't matter. Like the caching works for, you know, 99.9% of the users based upon that one event, and now I've updated, right? But you have to have very good planning in place ahead of time to know what are those types of events that are safely going to be able to bust the cache.
Absolutely. And you may be dealing with, like you guys were saying, cross-platform. Now I've got my PC player. He's trying to send something to a mobile player. I'm definitely hitting multiple servers there, and they may have a whole messaging process there that I have to take into account for my caching. This mobile service lets you play offline, and so now there's another layer there. I'm synchronizing offline data and online data simultaneously. It's incredibly hard.
Yeah, yeah, and that is the thing that I specifically want to point out is cache, when you first approach it, seems, that's simple, right? But there is so much that actually needs to go into planning cache that, like many things in the world of software development, it should be easier than it is, but it's not.
All right, thanks, Jake. Daryl, you want to give us some news for the week?
Yeah, so Microsoft has finally officially announced the last date or the end of Internet Explorer.
Oh, man.
Finally.
Can
right?
I? Woo! Yeah, we should be clapping, guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, there's a lot of people who don't understand what that really means.
Yeah. Internet Explorer 11, right? I think the last update was like 2013 or something like that. That was the last iteration of it anyway, right? And so it's November 30th of this year. It will cease to exist. Whether or not that is actually true, it'll still be an app. It may just have limited functionality or no functionality. They haven't really gone into the details of that yet. But they're going towards Edge or the new version of Edge. They're also looking to deprecate the old version. So it'll be the Chromium-based only now, starting sometime next year.
Yeah, let me jump in here. I just want to call out, like, you know, I'm super excited for them to switch over to Chromium. And I think that, like, looking at things as a developer standpoint, we even talked about this last week when I talked about Firefox and Mozilla, that for people who don't understand why this is such a big deal or what's going on, just be aware that your peers have had to support software or this browser under certain compliance rules and regulations. They had to support a browser that didn't even have 99% of the good new functionality of, like, JavaScript.
Yeah.
So many things were missing.
Yeah, and that's absolutely, I think, what Microsoft is trying to do here. They're trying to get away from supporting this old thing and get more on board with, hey, you know, Chrome's been making the standards for a while now. Everybody's just been adhering to them. It's not really official, but what they've been putting out, everyone's just been adhering to. So, hey, let's just jump on board with that. I think that even follows the topic you were talking about last week or the week before, right? MDN had all those big layoffs. I think all the big browser wars are kind of like, hey, let's maybe take a step back. Let's adopt this Chromium thing. And then hopefully let's come out with some new browsers. So it's not always just, hey, if you're a developer, you're using Chrome and that's just what you got. You get those tools and you got to work with that. There's no competition there right now.
Yeah, I think what is very interesting to me, and this comes from, you know, years of working in the healthcare industry, there are so many government systems, and I kid you not, right? And you may think that this is absolutely absurd, because quite frankly, it kind of is, but there are systems that were built on, you know, the premise of you have to, must use Internet Explorer like 6, 7, right? Oof. This only works here under this very particular environment. And again, these are systems that tie directly into Medicare, right? And so I remember just being a healthcare provider, and this was before I became a software developer, and having to go and find an old installation of Internet Explorer 7 and install it on my, you know, Windows. Well, I can't even remember what version of Windows I was using, but it was so hard to find, just so that I could actually do my appropriate like billing and whatnot. And that was a requirement or a stipulation put into place by Medicare. So I do find it interesting that, you know, if Microsoft is really truly pulling the plug on Internet Explorer, you know, what does that mean for some of those older systems, right? And I think this is actually a big shift for Microsoft, because the schedule at which they're deprecating and dropping support for old technology is just a huge shift for Microsoft. For the longest time, it was, we'll support this forever. And now all of a sudden, you know, VB is going by the wayside. Internet Explorer going by the wayside. Office going by the wayside, unless you got Office 365. So it's just, it's a very interesting shift, I think, for Microsoft in general. And I think it's also just like going to have other repercussions that, quite frankly, I have no idea how large that's going to go at this moment.
Yeah, I don't want to dive down that rabbit hole too much, but like the first thing is, you were talking about that I think of is, yeah, what are compliance and regulations going to look like when it comes to a government standpoint? Because anybody who's worked on any kind of government systems know that any change within the government with stuff like that is a huge, like, congressional approval to actually make the change in the bill that says you must support, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I think that is where I'm concerned. And again, I don't want to dive into politics, but the government moves slowly. And November 30th, we're looking, what, 2 months at this point? That's super early. And so I think that's hopefully not going to become too much of a problem or too much of a holdup for systems that, hey, you know, I'm a small healthcare facility in the middle of nowhere, and we have these ancient computers that only run up to Windows 95, and that's all I got. And so what does that look like for those companies and organizations? Like, I'm so happy for it to leave as a developer to not have to support it. But on the flip side, I'm sure there are things that still exist out there that's all they can use.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, being aware of the potential downsides of what a, you know, forced upgrade is going to be, right? And we know how much we love forced Windows updates, right? They can be absolutely awful, right?
Yeah, Daryl, have you gotten that bricked computer back yet?
No.
So yeah, I'm aware of that. Like, I can be super excited about, you know, being able to write code once and it's supported very well across the Chromium, you know, range of feature sets. And that's wonderful for me as a developer. But yeah, there is going to be some serious blowback here. And to kind of just put things into a little bit of perspective, right? We talked last week or whatever, but it was about Boeing's security policy was just using 3.5-inch floppy drives to do their updates because it's secure. And some of these systems were specifically built around this Internet Explorer protocol that's in place because we know we can trust this very particular mode of transfer of data. Those things have been updated, they've been changed, they've been shifted. And so, yeah, there is a huge thing to consider with that death of Internet Explorer.
Yeah, that's a big ship to steer and turn. And with it coming up November 30th, like you said, that's really quick. And I imagine that's probably why they didn't allude to how deprecated will it be, or they just, will it cease to exist? They did mention that in future versions of Windows and things like that, it just won't be there. It won't be an option. So we'll see.
So are we actually thinking that the one job of Internet Explorer to go download and install Chrome, it's no longer going to exist, right?
That torch is now passed to Edge.
Yeah.
Which it won't be necessary, since technically they'll be built on the same underlying technology. And I don't know if you guys have actually used the new Edge, but dare I say, it is a billion times better than Chrome and doesn't hog nearly the resources that Chrome in and of itself does.
Yeah, how much do you get paid to say that?
That is exactly what I'm excited for. Maybe we'll get some new revamped Chromium-based browsers and we won't have just Chrome to choose from.
Right.
Yeah, I think that, again, to build on last week's topic, into this week's topic, with another competitor potentially leaving the browser market, how is that going to change? Maybe Microsoft, are they going to shift resources just completely out? Are they going to look at better resources for DevTools? Because ultimately, if your platform dies because you take out DevTools, the developers are going to naturally push the rest of the audience where they are the most comfortable. It's ultimately why Chrome started to take off as ease of use when it came to building stuff.
Yeah, and I have to chuckle just a little bit because I think the last time I booted up a new computer and installed all the manual tools and whatever and went through that process, it was either in Explorer or Edge or something, but I went to change the default browser, right? And it's like, are you really sure? Like, give us a chance. Like, let us try.
Now.
Edge is better now. Like, we promise. We've gotten better, right? And so I find that funny. And really, truthfully, I gave them the benefit of the doubt and I tried it. And there are some really nice features and, you know, some smoother animations and some smoother CSS transitions and things of that nature that I feel like, you know, being able to put your focus on what's going to make you truly unique and better is a good thing that a lot of these companies can do with shifting and adopting other technology. It's the same concept as pulling in someone else's library because what they've done is good.
Thanks, Daryl. So I wanted to take in the deep dive this week and do a little something a little bit different than what we usually do. Usually we pick on one topic and, you know, we kind of dive deeply into it. But here I wanted to talk actually about several different things and identify in kind of what a little game of sorts that I want to call over-under. And I'm going to kind of give us a topic and I want to discuss whether we think it's overrated or underrated. So let me just kind of dive right in and just kind of respond if you feel it's overrated, underrated. We don't have to come to consensus or anything. Just what is your opinion on it? So I'll start out. First word here, PWAs. It's funny you mentioned this earlier. The Progressive Web App. Are they overrated, underrated?
I think that's such a that's a tough one to say. My first like knee-jerk reaction is completely 100% over and underrated, right? And to clarify that is, I think PWAs are really cool, and I think they have so much potential, and I think the potential that is behind them is definitely, like, it's there, and it's awesome, and not enough people know about it. And so I would say, like, for the advocates out there for PWAs, they talk about it being the new best thing, and to some degree it is, but I think that the education is nowhere near enough that it needs to be for it to actually be widely adapted or adopted.
Yeah, I would say, you know, you're pretty spot on there, both over and underrated. I say underrated because of course, the power they have there and having had to work with the app stores, both of them. It's super nice being able to just cut both of those out and saying, hey, when they hit my webpage, they have the option to just get my app right here. I personally love that about the PWAs. I think that's the greatest thing. It's far simpler for your users. It just works really, really nicely.
Yeah. I think to argue that just a little bit, though, their users have been so trained to, like, hey, you go to iTunes, go to the App Store, download this thing, right? Like, the typical, like, user pathway is to go download this from a trusted resource. And I feel like that's the one, like, sketchy thing still about PWAs is I land on a website and it's like, add this to my home screen. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, I think that that's the other piece to it. To build a little bit, Daryl, sorry that Jake interrupted you and then I interrupted Jake, so we'll get back to you. But to build on that a little bit, I wanted to say that I feel like they're underrated by the user, but potentially overrated by the developer. In that, PWAs are not the solution to every problem. And I feel like I'm jumping ahead here because I feel like there's a lot of things on this list that fall under that exact, like, people think this is the golden hammer to everything, and you'll see more what I mean in the very next statement. But that said, I feel like for users, they can be really beneficial, really useful if put together correctly when it's appropriate. But from a developer standpoint, same almost inverse of that, only really use it if it makes sense for your app. Does this need to be an app on your phone, or is this just like a splash page, like a landing page for some informational website? You don't need that.
Yeah, that was one of my complaints. I think, you know, the other day I hit some random like blog post, right? and it asked me if I wanted to like download and install this random blog post to my phone. No. And especially being a developer, knowing kind of the limitations or some of the concepts behind the PWA, I really don't need blog engines cached, right? I don't need to be able to read them offline. That's not super important to me.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part. Like, is this going to be something your user's actually going to use like an app? Is it just an informational page? Is it just a page they're going to want to visit occasionally? Don't make that an app. There's no reason to make that a PWA. That's just going to irritate your users more than anything. That's kind of what I was talking about, is all conversion rates. You're absolutely correct. I think conversion rates are going up in the sense that more people are familiar with, hey, if I see something, I'm going to go search the app store for it and just see if that thing has an app to actually download. And that's far more prevalent nowadays than it used to be. But that conversion rate is still kind of low. And so that PWA just helps you out. Hey, if they're just happening to hit my homepage or my webpage, which is still the most common way of finding things, Googling it, finding the webpage, that's what brings your kind of conversion rate up. I can keep people locked into this app. It goes on their home screen. They see it often. It gets updates. All of those kinds of things.
So do we have to make like an official
overrated,
underrated, or is that enough? Like, because I don't know where that necessarily falls.
We kind of all ended up in the middle there. So let me give you another one. This one may be a little more polarizing. These are very much buzzwords that we see them all the time. And you see them on everybody's like, oh, I want to learn about what? Machine learning and AI.
AI. Ugh.
Overrated or underrated? It's the same boat, right? I bring this up because it's the same boat, right? Of the, it's overused.
So can we pick one or the other first, right?
Sure. Let's start with machine learning.
Okay, machine learning. Let's go there first. Overrated, underrated, right? I would have to say machine learning, definitely underrated. What we can do with machine learning is absolutely fascinating. And it is insane. It is so cool. And more developers should absolutely be focusing on machine learning. And so I will hands down, and I'm going to save some of my comments for AI here in a second. But yeah, I'm going to say machine learning is underrated. It's not talked about enough, and there's not enough education on how it actually works.
Yeah, I would probably second that. And I think I lean towards the machine learning first because it's the thing that we can actually define, right? And that's probably what's better about it. AI is just kind of open right now. Like, I don't even feel qualified to talk on the definition of what AI is. And so for machine learning, yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot more applications and processes and software that could absolutely benefit from leveraging that a little more.
So this is where I'm going to counter you guys just a little bit, because while I'm not saying you're wrong there, I'm going to say overrated a little bit, because in my perspective, there's so many things that people look at and go, oh, we could use machine learning here. We could use machine learning to design a coffee shop website. And I think, no. Yes, technically you could, but you're probably spending so much more time setting up cases and analyzing the data or anything else than if you just wrote the website. So I think, in my opinion, that's where I feel like machine learning is not a golden hammer so much as everyone treats it as it is. And I'm gesturing, and of course people can't see me point at Jake, and he's smiling right now. But I will call this out before you jump in. I remember we had a conversation about this where someone was like, eventually machine learning will be so good, we'll just explain a website and it'll make it for us.
False.
And I think that's, yeah, 100% that's not going to happen.
Yeah, so to kind of push back on your pushback, right? It's, I don't see any reason why you couldn't use machine learning to build like the most optimal, best sale-driven platform for selling your coffee type of idea. That is something that is completely doable, and it's not nearly as hard as what most people would think, right? But I would say that it's, you know, because I'm not seeing machine learning used in that particular mode, right? I'm not seeing people building plain old websites with machine learning. That's almost the reason why I would say that it is underrated, right? Because people don't even know what is possible with machine learning. And that is very possible. Now, granted, it's probably not the best use of machine learning, but it is possible. And the fact that you don't see it is because machine learning is underrated. Or maybe the word that I would better describe this is it's undereducated.
Yeah, and how do you build those, you know, fantastic, most, you know, the websites that drive the most attention and have the greatest analytics, you go through and you search all that stuff. Machine learning can do that for you much, much faster than a human can, right? Once you've taught it, of course. And so I would agree, that's probably a pretty efficient use case for it. I don't think it's a common one. In fact, I was, I don't think I had thought of that. But sitting here, I'm like, oh man, that is actually a great use case for it. That is what you would do as a company who builds websites and wants to build really, really great websites. You're going to go research all that stuff. And that's boring, and I don't want to do that. So let's have machine learning do that for me.
Right. And I think, you know, there's a human factor at play here, right? Like A-B testing exists because we have to be able to gather data from actual humans, not computers, right? In a computer, leading right into artificial intelligence, right? A computer, regardless of how good we can make it learn at this current point in time, it is not a human, and it can't make human-based decisions.
I'm pretty sure AI is just a series of if-else statements.
Those are neural networks, Mark.
Oh, my mistake.
Very complicated.
Oh, let's not dive down that rabbit hole. So I don't know where official consensus goes there, but to jump straight into AI, I think way too overrated. People talk about it. They don't even really truly understand it. And so I'm going to take this from the approach of what the common belief of what AI is versus what today artificial intelligence actually is. I think in, you know, maybe this is pop culture and sci-fi and all that. Maybe it's the fault of, you know, Hollywood industry. But artificial intelligence has almost taken us to the point where, you know, we are saying my expectation for an AI is sapience, is, you know, true decision-making, is
robot.
Human influence. It's being able to have and process emotions. And quite frankly, no, that's not even remotely what we're talking about when we want to talk about artificial intelligence.
I'm not sure I'm even qualified to speak on that.
Right. It's a huge, deep thing that most of the time when you talk about, yeah, you're probably talking about the Hollywood reference of like robots that think for themselves.
Absolutely. And the kind of AI, what I call AI, which I'll just flat out say is not AI, but it is along that concept of, hey, I'm just creating this for the strategy game, let's say, you know, game development again here. I'm creating this thought pattern that I want this thing to utilize. And it has a couple of set events that it can respond to and interact with, but that's about it. It's not really decision-making. It's still me saying, hey, this is the action you're going to take if this thing has happened.
Right. And that's where a finite state machine has nothing really truthfully to do with AI, right? And that's why, you know, I groan so much when people talk about AI, is because we are nowhere near the technological like capabilities of pulling off like true artificial intelligence, unless I'm just like grossly undereducated on this concept. But, you know, that general thought or the general idea that people have with AI is like, yes, this thing is so cool, but no, we are so far off from that. I feel like the focus now should be more on machine learning, not AI, right? And I think that's where that confusion is. And that's why I groan so much is, you know, don't bother to drop AI in when talking about machine learning. It's not worth it. Let's just actually get good at machine learning first. And then we can start to broach the concepts of what AI might actually someday be.
Yeah, teach it to fill out these state machines itself in a far more efficient manner that I could actually incorporate by hand.
So the last one I'll throw in here real quick is going to be blockchain. Overrated. No one can see the hands in the face. Overrated, underrated with blockchain.
I'm going to let Daryl speak first on that one because, yeah.
I'm just going to go straight into overrated because I can't tell you how many times I've been invited by other developers. Hey, join me and we'll make this blockchain thing. And then we all just sit there like, yeah, I don't really know what we're supposed to do here, but it seemed like the buzzword that we're supposed to learn and do, and we never actually accomplished anything, right? So I'm just going to say straight up overrated right there. I think it has its use cases that are valid, but I think we just try to use it everywhere for no good reason.
Yeah, I definitely feel like blockchain fell right into the golden hammer rule, right? It's, here's this thing, it exists. All of a sudden, like, cryptocurrency skyrocketed for some who knows what crazy reason, right? And all of a sudden, it became this, like, big public awareness that, hey, we have this technology. It's called blockchain. It's brand new. It's never been thought of before. False. We developed the concepts behind blockchain back in the 80s, And so it's not a golden hammer. It's not a perfect solution. It's not even new technology. The application in which it was used was kind of a new twist on it. And that's why I think it skyrocketed so much. And all of a sudden, there was a bunch of money dumped behind the concepts of it. But really, what you're talking about with the blockchain is just transactional database, transactional record keeping that says, you know, let's log and let's keep track of every single transaction that's ever occurred will change and will follow. And, you know, there's kind of some the concepts there behind validating the block. And none of that is super new. Those are all things that are very important. And I think in very specific types of applications, it is, yes, the perfect solution. But when you get invited to, you know, the random developer group and it's like, hey, we're going to solve the next world problem using blockchain. The first question is, why blockchain, right? And if you can't find a good reason to use the block, then no, absolutely, like overrated, right? And that would be, again, my take on the situation. But I think blockchain in and of itself, super cool piece of technology. You should absolutely learn how it works. There's some really good like core fundamental principles behind the block, but you shouldn't be switching out your like RESTful databases for blockchain. No.
I think that was exactly it every time. It was like, okay, I mean, I guess we can try to shove that in there, but you know, this other thing's going to work way better, keeping our traditional databases.
To say, I also am that overrated camp. For me, it's like that, just like you guys explained, like a lot of people find the solution of blockchain and then look for a problem. Absolutely. As opposed to the other way around. It's not like, hey, we found ourselves in this corner and we need to find a solution and, you know, we need to handle this a certain way and, oh, you know, let's look at blockchain. That might be a solution. And sure enough, oh, it is. Or, oh, no, it's not. And let's keep moving. Whereas so many times, like you said, it's like, hey, I want to build an app with blockchain. And then you're like,
let's
why?
Develop a problem.
Like you're looking for you already have the solution to a problem that doesn't exist. So, you know, that's it's the way the problem is sought after. And again, blockchain has become such a buzzword. And I grab some of these because they are buzzwords. And so it's, again, rating that. Is this a valid buzzword that we should talk about or one that's kind of a little bit? But I had one more and it was starting your own podcast, but we'll save that for next time.
Great. I would just throw in there as kind of a last final closing thought for the episode is industry standards exist for a reason. Best practices have been around for a reason. They're tried, they're tested, they're proven. That's not to say that we should always do it this way because it's the way it's been done. But in a lot of instances, yeah, you should probably just stick to what are industry standards for industry standard problems.
Yeah, watch the buzzword train go by and be aware of it. Maybe don't hop on it every time.
The hype train is real and a lot of people get on. All right. Well, we'll go ahead and close the episode there. And I want to thank everyone for joining us here on the podcast. If you've enjoyed this, please remember to like us and subscribe on your favorite podcasting network. And until then, happy coding.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Dev Team. If you're interested in learning more about our team or possibly starting a career in software development, reach out to us at boisecodeworks.com. Follow us on Facebook and like and subscribe to this podcast to continue to receive the latest updates. Until then, from The Dev Team, remember, if you want clean code, wash your hands.